plan for reserves, plan for that extra on your renovation. They always go over. I have only done one project where it has came in at the budget. So they always go over somehow, some way. So always allot for that in your numbers.
Welcome to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. Whether you are an active or passive investor, we'll teach you how to scale your real estate investing business into something big.
Lauren Meadows is an active real estate investor in small multifamily and single family homes. She has scaled her portfolio to 15 doors utilizing the BRRRR strategy and is also a licensed realtor in the state of Ohio and flips houses in Southern Ohio and Northeastern Kentucky. Lauren, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
The pleasure's mine. The same questions I ask everybody who comes on the show is, where'd you start? Where are you now? And quickly, how did you get there?
Yeah, so we started with our first rental or our first flip with a house we bought for $2,500 in Southern Ohio. Yeah, you can't do that anymore. And now we've scaled up to, we have 15 rental properties and we've done some flips out through the past several years. And we've all utilized that through the BRRRR strategy. But personally, I'm like most other people. I, you know, went to school, graduated with a bachelor's degree from Marshall University and quickly, you know, wound up in corporate America.
Wow. What was the transition from corporate America to full-time real estate?
So I am still in corporate America, but my husband got to transition out of his W-2 job in 2018. So,
oh, that's fun. That's fun. Have you guys built, I know your bio here says you have some small multifamily as well as single family homes. Have you guys built this incrementally one project at a time? Or was there ever a point where all of a sudden you're like, oh, hey, we're taking out a bunch of these at once?
So the first rental properties we actually purchased was a mixed portfolio of 8 different units.
Got it.
We just dove in there with that one.
That's awesome. Talk to us about that experience or that process. And what were some of the things that you learned, maybe that you did right, and maybe that you would want to do a little bit differently?
Yeah. So with that particular deal, we're completely new to the rental, but we knew we wanted to get into that, into the buy and hold. And we had a family friend that owned these 8 doors. It was a, you know, some duplexes, single families, that type of thing. And we said, hey, you know, you wanted $250,000 for these 8 doors. And then we were like, well, we don't have $50,000 to put down. You know, would you own or finance it? And he did. So that was our first go at creative financing. And we knew that they all needed substantial work done to them. Basically, we had $80,000 of cash in reserves. And we were like, okay, we just got to make $80,000 work to spread across all of these properties, right? And what we found and what our strategy and part of our philosophy is, go in, do all of the work up front. That way you have a good turnkey product, good for your tenants, and it makes the community look better too. So that 80 grand did not extrapolate through all of those rehabs is what we quickly found out.
Right, right. Yeah. I mean, not only if you, especially if these are either, you know, single family homes and or small multis, like, I mean, that's 10 grand a unit. That's not going very far.
It did not go far at all. So we found ourselves where we basically needed to raise another $50,000. And at first, you know, because we have a small circle here, we hadn't really branched out into the private money or anything like that. So we used a mix of credit cards. And then we finally did find a private investor that would come on and basically give us an unsecured loan, which is, it was a family and friend. So somebody that trusted us, of course. And so we were able to do that, and then we refinanced it after 13 months. So we finished all those rehabs and repositioned them, got all the tenants out that in that process that were inherited tenants that either weren't paying or whatever the case may be, because they were bad. They were some bad properties. So yeah, we repositioned that, refinanced it, paid off all of the debts, the private money and the owner financed, and we hold that today.
Wow, that's awesome. So you said your husband was able to step out in 2018. Is that right?
Yeah, yeah. So he was in the ironworkers. He did that for, I think, 12 years before that.
Wow.
Yeah, so he got to step out in 2018. Now he focuses mostly on the renovation side and manages crews and things like that.
Right, right. What was the freedom number? Maybe not necessarily the actual number, but what was the number of units at which you said, hey, look, this is enough for us to, where you don't have to go back to that W-2 job?
Yeah, well, I think we definitely did it with the 8 units plus with my W-2 income. So it certainly allowed him that flexibility. So what we found was between having 2 under 2, both of us working full time, and trying to scale a real rental portfolio, it was just not manageable. So.
Right, right. That's awesome. Talk to us maybe, you know, about the second phase of this. So you picked up 8 on the front end, which finding 8 properties that somebody wants to own or finance. Yeah, it sounds like they need a lot of work, but still, I mean, that's a pretty good go in the beginning. What was the next 7? And then where do you want to go from here?
So we, you know, did a duplex in there. That one was pretty easy. We just used our own capital, BIRD it. Nobody was living in it at the time or anything. So it was a quick, easy renovation, get tenants placed, refinance. And then we did a 5 unit. It was actually a 4 unit and a single family house. And that's one that we repositioned this past year. And it was a little bit more creative. We knew an individual that had a insurance claim, essentially, that where they had had a property that had burnt down. They needed to purchase a property in order to get those funds from the claim for their, it's a whole thing. I'm sure that there was other ways to go about it. This is what their policy and the insurance agent was telling them. So they partnered with us on purchasing these. And then it was kind of like a construction type of loan for them or a phase out in order to get those funds. And so we utilized that. And then we gave them a return on that investment as well as some of our personal capital we used for that.
Oh, that's fascinating. When I say the word tenant, what comes to mind and what lessons have you learned?
Screening. It all comes down to screening. So I've not had to evict any of my tenants that I personally have placed. So I think it just comes down to that. You know, if you get inherited tenants, you didn't get to screen those tenants. And a lot of times if you're purchasing the ones that are value add, sometimes you will get some, you know, those inherited tenants might be a little bit more difficult to deal with, or they might have economic vacancy in those units where they're actually not paying. So I think it's just important to figure out where that tenant is in their place. And we've utilized cash for keys a lot whenever, you know, it's not working out for either side, and it's been very effective. So
that's fantastic. That's fantastic. How active are you on the side of being a licensed realtor?
So basically what I use my license for is I'll list our flips. So if we get an off-market deal that comes in and it's not something that we can tackle or doesn't really align with the seller's interests, is maybe they need more than what we're able to give for it, at that point, I'll list it on the MLS for them.
Right. And what's that conversation like as a realtor when you guys go to make an offer on a property and you say, hey, look, I can't buy it, because a lot of times people want out pretty quick, I would imagine, in that situation. How does that conversation transition from, well, I can't buy it, but I can list it for you?
So I'm just honest. If you come from a point of authenticity to people, I think that everybody will understand you, you know, and I'll say, you know, I have a lot more expenses with this, the renovation, the holding costs, it's really going to add up. I'm not going to be able to purchase it for what you're needing out of it. I would have to be more at like this number. And if the numbers are just too far, there's just no way. And I'll be honest, I'll say, I've said this on more than one deal, you can probably get more out of it if you sell it to somebody else than me, because I'm going to go in and I'm going to do everything to this property. I'm going to make sure if I go to resell it, it's going to pass all of the inspections, going to be ready for an FHA or VA type of loan, because that's what we see a lot in our market. So I'm very upfront with them. The duplex that I talked about earlier that we purchased, that was another conversation. I said, you can probably get more out of this from somebody else. And they were like, no, we love what you do. We know that you guys do great work. You really bring the community back when you do this. So we want you all to buy it. So I think it's being honest with them. And then I'll say, hey, I can't buy it for this, but certainly can, I'll list it for you on the MLS. I'm a licensed agent, which I'm required to disclose to them, you know, anytime that I'm talking to a potential seller. So they know that I'm a realtor already.
Next question I would have for the properties that you guys do acquire, why do you flip versus just turning everything into long-term holds?
Well, we use a lot of that capital to reinvest it. So we want to build up our capital reserves, essentially, and you can do that with flips.
Got it.
Most of them I wish I would have kept. So.
Right. Yeah. Why do you say that?
Well, the first flip that we did in 2017, you know, we purchased that for $2,500 and I think we had like 45 grand in it. I said, done deal, you know, that would have been a perfect BIRD deal if I would have known what I knew now, if I would have known that then. But we flipped it and we got, you know, we sold it for 20. They made it like 20 grand on profit.
Right. What's that property worth today?
You know, we just thought it would probably go for 90 to 100,000.
Right.
So I wish it would have been a great cash flow property. And honestly, we probably could have done a cash out refi on that because the appraisals were probably even a little bit higher than what we sold for because the market wasn't as hot in 2017. So we probably could have done a cash out refi, got the same amount of cash, then had rental income and all the other benefits.
Right. Yeah. It's funny how that works out, especially in the single family side of things. When you just go, if there's ways, when you learn more about what your business is and what it is that you could have done with it, it's always like, oh, if I had thought through that a little bit better, you know, but I guess that's just part of it. So talk to us about that. What are some mistakes maybe that you have made in this journey and what did you do to overcome those?
Yeah. Well, two mistakes that I like to tell everybody about. One is that 8 unit that we bought where we were really looking for capital. We were strapped for cash. And that's something that people don't talk about very often is that you can really go cash broke pretty quick whenever you're buying real estate. It was funny. I was playing the cash flow game, the Robert Kiyosaki game with my 5-year-old the other day. And, you know, we're buying the assets. And I was like, and now why you see mommy and daddy are always broke because they're buying the assets, right? But, you know, in that situation, we used a lot of our own capital and it got a little tight there, you know? And so that was something I tell everybody. It's actually safer if you utilize private money or you go in with partnerships because you're not going to be strapped for cash. And like one bad thing that would have, could have went wrong, could have really put us in a pickle. So.
Yep.
Lots of reserves and plan for extra on your rehabs.
And that's true in any real estate. I mean, that's true, whether or not you're doing a $200,000 flip or you're doing a $100 million apartment complex. Like,
yeah.
And it's amazing. You would think that the bigger players or the bigger outfits and the more minds there are inside of those outfits, people would have said, hey, wait, you know, we're going to need CapEx reserves of X plus 20%. And that lesson has bitten more people, even on the large commercial side of things.
Well, it's easy to say just to try to get the numbers to work for you in that, and you're like, really want to tackle the deal and do that. But how the 8-plex, how I could have done it differently, because the purchase price was good. I probably couldn't have got that down much more. I could have planned more for the rehab and I could have had a better plan in place for the money part of it.
Got it. Yeah, that's really interesting. And that's, so you guys were able though in that deal, in the end, you were able to get private money on it. And that's, I mean, you learned the lesson, but it didn't bite you entirely.
No, it didn't. But it was uncomfortable enough to be like, I want to not use my own money anymore. I don't want to use my own money anymore. I want to use private money.
Right. And that's tough, especially if you have capital sitting in a bank account doing nothing.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's tough not to just dig in there and use all that, but you never know when that dry powder, it will be exactly what you need to weather the storm, whatever that storm is.
Absolutely. And you might need that liquidity for another deal just to bridge you until you're able to get financing on another deal. So good to stay liquid as much as you can, in my opinion.
Right. Talk to me about the future. What do you guys want to build your company into and why?
So we want to obviously scale into larger assets. The 5 units that I talked to you guys about, what happened with that one, it was a BRRRR property and the ARV came in under what we had expected. And we went over what we had anticipated on the rehab yet again. But we were in a new municipality. We didn't know about all the zoning and all the different code enforcement. And we didn't do our due diligence there. So we went a little over on our renovation. Plus the ARV didn't come out quite like we had hoped for. And one thing that in our market specifically is that the dollar per square foot is much less on a small multifamily than what it is for a single family house. So it's very difficult to rehab this because we know that the cost per square foot is to rehab is similar to a single family house, if not in some ways, potentially more if you're having to go through commercial zoning and those types of things. So what we found was that those small multifamilies is going to be really difficult to continue to defer them and do our renovations, which is nothing spectacular compared to other markets, but we're just bringing a good product to people in our area. So now we're looking at more of those commercial assets, those 5+ units that are going to be, the value is going to be looked at more for the net operating income rather than just comps.
Right. Yeah. And that's a challenge that many people have run into, singles to, you know, quadplexes, is that they are valued on comps, not on NOI, which is, I mean, that's just challenging.
You lose control.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a great way to put it. That's a great way to put it. Yeah, I love that. So moving forward, you guys are going 5+.
Yeah, and you know, ideally we'd like to be even more than that, like a 10+. We're really looking in that 15, 20, 30 unit range in our market, and we're starting to explore some other markets, so we'll see where that takes us.
Right. Oh, that's awesome. And you know, the nice thing about scaling in, you know, with those smaller, I'm going to say smaller unit sizes, the 10, 20, 30 unit sizes, mm-hmm. you know, you're not facing a lot of the competition.
Right.
From institutional players. You're not built buying a 300 unit, it's 30. And that's a great way, especially if you can self-manage and you guys already have the systems and processes in place. I mean, that's a great way to.
Yeah, I think it'll be a sweet spot for the next phase. And then who knows what comes from there.
Right, right. That's awesome. I love the vision and the foresight on where you guys want to take it. I also love the measured approach to it. It's not, all right, hey, we're going out for 100,000. I'm just making up numbers here, but 100,000 units in the next 10 years, whatever some absurd number is. It's like, this is it. We can accomplish this. And this is how you move the ball down the field. So that's really cool. Before we jump here into the final questions, what else, or is there anything else that you'd love to share with our listeners that you felt like has been relevant or important to you in your real estate journey?
I think that you just have to not be afraid to fail, you know, have measurements in place, but get out of your comfort zone and don't be afraid to fail. I was having this conversation with my 5-year-old again the other day. Super competitive, like almost to probably an unhealthy level, like so competitive. I was like, Knox, you have to be okay with failing. Like, mommy has failed so many things in my career, in, you know, athletics and school. It's okay to fail. And I have to remind myself of that too. Of course, I don't want to go in bankruptcy, but I have to remind myself it's okay to get out of your comfort zone. It's okay to stumble as long as you're moving forward.
That's awesome. I love that. I love that. Yeah, absolutely. Don't be afraid to fail. That commonly gets in the way.
Yeah.
Final questions for you are this. If you could help our listeners avoid one mistake in real estate, what would it be and how would you avoid it?
So I think it definitely goes back to what we were talking about as far as your cash reserves. Make sure you plan for that, because bankruptcy, right? You don't want to have to get into that kind of spot. So plan for reserves, plan for that extra on your renovation. They always go over. I have only done one project where it has came in at the budget. So they always go over somehow, some way. So always a lot for that in your numbers.
Have you ever done a study and actually figured out what the average percentage of overage is for all of your projects?
Yeah. So ours is about 10%. So I try to underwrite for that.
That's not bad.
No, it's not terrible. I mean, for my market, I feel like I've got the renovation cost down a little bit, you know, at this point. We've done, you know, several renovations at this time. So I feel like I have it down pat. It's not like the HGTV, right? We know we go with this paint color, this cabinet, this countertop every single time. So it becomes more predictable, which then you get into a safer investment.
Right, right. Yeah. Cost plus 10% or budget plus 10% sounds like a very reasonable thing to build in there into your pro formas. Next question for you is this: when it comes to investing in the world, what's one thing you're doing right now to make the world a better place?
Yeah. So right now I'm focusing on my two little ones, Knox and Skylar. They're 5 and 4. So I'm trying to raise two good humans so they can go off and do better things in the world. And then another thing that I've had on my heart for a long time, and I've reached out to a few different group homes and places like that, is I want to start some type of, maybe it's a philanthropy. I haven't really put legs on it yet, but I'd like to start something that teaches financial literacy to kids, you know, in my community that are either underprivileged or maybe just not, maybe just middle-class people that need financial literacy, our kiddos.
Right. Oh, gosh. Financial literacy is, as you're well aware, playing the Robert Kiyosaki game. You can graduate high school and be able to do calculus, but I guarantee you that 99% of those kids graduating high school have no idea what a HELOC is or even the basic terms of a mortgage.
Yeah. So that's really on my heart. I want to be able to do that. I think that you can transform lives with financial literacy. You know, I mean, gosh, I've reached out to some people and I haven't really got a lot of feedback. So I don't know if it's because it's that big of a problem in our area or just maybe all around the world, but it's needed.
Oh, for sure. For sure. That's fantastic. I love that. Well, best of luck to you as you undertake that. Lauren, if our listeners want to get in touch with you, what is the best way to do that?
Yeah, so you can go to my Instagram, lauren.buy.sell.invest.
Lauren.buy, that's BUI.sell.invest. And that's Lauren, LAURYN, correct?
That's correct.
Awesome. Lauren, thank you so much for your time today. I do appreciate it.
Yes, thank you so much. I've enjoyed it.
Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate podcast. If you can do me a favor and subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever platform it is you use to listen. If you can do that for us, that would be a fantastic help to the show. It helps us both attract new listeners as well as rank higher on those directories. So appreciate you listening. Thanks so much and hope to catch you on the next episode.